Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we are going to be talking best practices for tennis parents today with our guest, Chad Stoloff. Chad is the CEO of A Disciplined Mind. He does mental coaching. He's got a master's degree in sports science with an emphasis in sports psychology, and he's also a tennis pro, a teaching professional. He has coached juniors. He's coached D1 tennis. He's played D1 tennis. He has played college juniors, the whole shebang, and he is here today to share with us some ideas on how we as parents of these junior players can do a better job out there. So I'm really looking forward to chatting with Chad today and getting his knowledge and experience for all of us to learn from. Before I bring him on the air, though, I just want to let you guys know, first of all, if you hear construction noise in the background, I apologize. I am broadcasting from my home office, and my next door neighbor has a big remodeling project going on, so that's been fun, hammering and power tools at 7 a.m. every morning, but, you know, stuff we put up with, it's not that big of a deal. Also, I wanted to let you know that over the next few weeks, I am going to be broadcasting from various spots. We are hitting the road on Saturday and heading down to Florida for a little vacation and then some tournaments for my son, and then heading out to California for more of the same. So it's going to be a crazy few weeks at Parenting Aces. My website posts, my tweets, my Facebook posts, and this show will all be coming at you from locations in Florida and California and maybe in between, I don't know. But hang with me and, you know, travel vicariously with me. It's comforting to know that you guys are still there no matter where I am. So I look forward to bringing you information as we get through our summer. So that in mind, let me bring Chad on the air and let's jump right in because I know he's got so much knowledge to share with us. Chad, thank you so much for being with us today, and I'm really looking forward to our talk.
Thanks for the opportunity, Lisa. I appreciate the privilege to come on and share hopefully some insight and bring some value to the tennis community, parents, and the like out there.
So I gave a brief history of your role in the tennis world. Did I skip anything, or is there anything you would like to expand upon?
No, you didn't skip anything. Like you said, I started out playing juniors, started playing tennis, took my first lesson when I was 6 and a half, and started playing tournaments at 8, you know, 8, 9, that age, and played the juniors in Northern California, and grew up in Northern Nevada, which is part of Northern California section, for those people who don't know, and played college tennis and coached college tennis, and now coaching in the private sector, and it's been a great experience and a very challenging experience.
I'll bet. So how did you get involved in the mental side and coaching the mental side of the game?
That's a great question. I've been fascinated with psychology, sports psychology, since I was a kid, attending seminars, workshops, and Dr. Lair, Jim Lair, who's in Florida at the Human Performance Institute, listened to him when I was 11 or 12, worked with different sports psychologists as a junior in the group setting as well as individually throughout the juniors and collegiately. And so I've just had a real passion for it and wanted to keep learning and studying it and trying to share that knowledge that helps people. Bottom line, I enjoy just serving others, just helping somebody get over something or learn from something so that they can succeed ultimately.
That's great. Well, I know the tennis community is lucky to have you. Before we get any further, I just want to throw out our call-in number in case any of our listeners would like to call in with questions. That number is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853 in case any of our listeners would like to call in and chat with Chad. Gosh, that's a tongue twister there. Chat with Chad. Okay.
Yeah.
That may need to be the title of your talk show, Chad.
That's right. down the road, exactly.
There you go. All right. So let's get into this a little more. You have some ideas about best practices for tennis parents and how we as parents can help our kids and do a better job at helping our kids in their tennis development. Why don't you share with us your thoughts on that?
I'm happy to. So I think a couple key ideas to really focus on are fostering, number one, a love for the sport with your child. And parenting, as we know, as parents out there, it's the hardest job in the world, I really believe. And doing that in a sport, being a sport parent, is even adding another ball to juggle in the air. So I think first it starts off with letting our child just love playing the sport. And there's a reason that they gravitate to tennis and want to play tennis. And as we get into competitive environments, sometimes we can focus way too much on the end result of the winning and the losing and lose sight of, like Roger Federer said, I think last year, really he's still playing because he truly loves the sport. He doesn't want to be doing anything else when it comes to a professional pursuit or spending a considerable amount of time. So number one, I think it's that. Number two, it's letting the child, the tennis player, develop a sense of ownership over that sport, over tennis, so that they take the reins as they get older and they're driving the bus, so to speak, and deciding, okay, what can I accomplish, what do I want to accomplish, what avenues, how much time and effort do I want to put into this, where am I willing to go, where am I not, what choices, sacrifices am I willing to make. And the parents really guide them and facilitate that process, but not overly, okay, kid, you're in the passenger seat, and I'm driving this bus, and it's our tennis versus it's your tennis. It's your tennis game. It's your life. I'm here to help you.
Can I interrupt you 1 second? Because I think one of the most challenging things as a tennis parent that I've found is knowing at what age those items you're listing are appropriate to start implementing. And I know they have to be phased in, but let's say, like you said, you had your first tennis lesson at age 6. Well, a 6-year-old isn't really able to drive the bus, so to speak. So, you know, the role of the parent is very different with a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old than it is with a 15-year-old. And so maybe you can share with us a little more specifically what ages you're talking about.
That's a great point, Lisa. I appreciate you bringing that up and rejecting that idea. So as the child is younger, in the younger stages, let's say six, for example, when I took my first tennis lesson at 6 1/2, my parents, I had been bugging them to do a tennis lesson. I had just been going out and hitting with my parents or fooling around on the court with a friend or hitting on the backboard, and I was bugging my parents, I want to take a lesson. They could tell I was really into it. And so they said, all right, well, you know, we'll talk to the coach, the local tennis coach who happened to be the coach at the university. And he said, well, at that age, I'm only going to do a half an hour because of their attention span. And they said, okay, how about you do a half an hour, and if he's really into it, you do the second half an hour, and we'll pay you for that, of course. And he said, all right. And so we did an hour, and I said, I want to go back next week. And so even at that age, and this isn't the case for everyone, of course, but even at that age, I was taking a little bit of ownership as a 6 1/2-year-old, saying, yeah, Mommy, Daddy, I want to do this. And my parents were going, okay, you know, why do you want to do it? Is it fun? I think it's really important, going back to that first point, no matter the age of the child, to really emphasize the fun, the health benefits, mentally, physically, that the child can get out of the sport rather than the sport using us. And so at 6, at 8, it's the parents introducing these opportunities, these experiences and challenges to the child, and letting also, I think, the qualified, the educated role would be the coaches, the teaching pros at the different facilities, whether it's public or private facility, communicating with them. And as my parents did, for example, communicating with the local tennis pro and saying, okay, you know, what do you recommend? And that sort of thing, going further with that. So as the child continues to grow and develop, it becomes more and more their personal responsibility to drive themselves in the sport and to decide what's important to them. You know, is it playing high school tennis? Is it playing junior team tennis in the summers? Is it just having a lifelong pursuit of enjoyment and happiness with tennis? Or do they really want to play collegiately, competitively? Do they have aspirations of playing professional tennis? I think sometimes we, as parents, start going, okay, I have all this experience, and we start taking over, even with children at a young age. And you can really see, for example, we have a daughter, 3-year-old daughter. Right now she's not really into tennis, but she loves dance. She loves singing. She loves soccer. And I can see the joy, you know, when she's saying, all right, I want to go to this activity. We've introduced that to her. But we can see that I've taken her out to the tennis court a couple times so far, and she's run right over to the playground. So I can see that right now she's not that interested in tennis. But, for example, with like I said, with dancing, dance class, she's loving it. She's excited, and so I want to keep giving her opportunities to enjoy that and learn from the sport.
Right. Okay, so the key here is to really let the kid guide the bus, guide the process, and that requires us as parents to be pretty tuned in to not only what our child is saying to us, but also what they're not saying, maybe via their body language cues or other nonverbal cues. And to me, that's where things get so tricky. And you're not there yet with a three-year-old, but with teenagers especially, and boys more so than girls, it's often very difficult to read the cues that they're sending. And they may say one thing with their mouth, but their body language or their unspoken words may say something very different. And as parents, it's a huge challenge to know how to interpret that stuff.
No doubt about it. It's extremely difficult. When I was 14, 15, 16, I remember, really 15, 16 probably, I remember feeling pressure, which really was my own thought process, but not taking personal responsibility for that and blaming my parents when I would go and play tournaments and I wasn't performing up to the level that I felt I should be in sectional and national tournaments. And people in high school, people were starting to talk about, okay, you need to be ranked this if you want to go to this college, and if you want to, there was so much talk about the future of where you're going to end up playing collegiate tennis and getting a scholarship and getting a great degree and all this. And so I remember, really, my parents were not, looking back on it now, were not putting that pressure on me, but I was saying that. And I was saying, you know, you're putting so much pressure on me, da-da-da-da-da. And it's really challenging. Obviously, the teenage years are extremely challenging as a parent, because the child is trying to find their own path, and they're coming to that fork in the road where they're developing that identity and that consciousness of who I am as a person. And sometimes the sport tennis can define us. And it's versus going, okay, this is a part of me, part of what I do, an activity that I do, and I'm 100% committed to it, but it doesn't define me as a person. So I think as parents, it's important to emphasize that the value of the sport, the value of a person, doesn't come from what they do. It comes from who they are. So loving the child, you know, a 6-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 15-year-old, unconditionally, whether they win or lose in the competitive setting, win or lose the tennis match, or they behave inappropriately and using it as a teachable moment rather than, okay, we're going to take away that experience, that opportunity, take away tennis forever, that sort of thing. I think really focusing on the learning and the enjoyment that can come and the growth process of it as parents helps the kid. It really does. It takes the pressure off of, especially in the competitive setting, it takes the pressure off the parents, it takes the pressure off the kid, and making play the sport, because as a teenager, for example, that takes a lot of their time and time away, say, from social activities at times, going to tournaments on the weekends. They can't be there for the birthday parties and the get-togethers and camping and all that all the time. It helps them internally enjoy it, intrinsically enjoy it, and get rewards from that fulfillment, that satisfaction, rather than, okay, I've got to get to the semifinals of this tournament to keep my ranking at number 4. Otherwise, the world's going to hit me in the face.
Right. Yes, been there, done that. You mentioned the importance or the reality, I guess, for these kids that are playing at a competitive level, that they are missing out on a lot of social opportunities. So what can we as parents do to help compensate for that? And the reason I'm asking is, the show or followed Parenting Aces for a while, know my son's a rising senior in high school, And one of the things we're seeing more and more the older he gets is burnout among his peers. And for me as a parent, that's been one of my fears, especially in the last couple of years, is that my son would cave into the social pressures of school and the parties and, you know, prom and football games and all of that, and say, forget it, this tennis thing just isn't worth it, it's too hard, I want to just go be a regular teenager. What can we as parents do to help balance all of that so that our kids are less likely to suffer from that burnout?
It's a great point, great question, Lisa, and I think you used the word twice there, and it's really important as people. Doesn't matter what age, what stage of life we're at, we have to have balance. If we work 7 days a week, let's say 18 hours a day, boom, 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 for 6 months without a day off, without a break, we're going to burn out. We're not going to be as creative. We're not going to be as mentally engaged in our work. We're not going to be as efficient or as effective. So the same thing applies to the high school age student athlete, the tennis player, who goes, especially in that middle school and high school age, those teenager years, where socialization is a huge factor for most kids. It's important for us as parents to keep a balance, not have to go and play every single tournament to get a ranking. To let them be kids, let them enjoy that while balancing that with, okay, if you want to go play tournaments, you're going to have to practice. If you're going to do this, there's a cause and effect. Just laying out the consequences of their actions. So I think so many times I saw this as a college athlete and a college coach. I was a college coach for 7 years. I saw so many players. I coached in Division I at 3 different universities on the men's side. And I saw so many players come, and they were burnt out by the time they came to college. And you could see it. They didn't want to be at practice. They didn't want to go play tournaments. They didn't want to come before practice, stay after, and work on their games and develop their games, because they were fried, they were done. And I think one of the best things you talked about with your intro, one of the best things is doing a family vacation, or letting your kid, instead of playing this, you know, oh, you got to play this tournament to get this ranking and boom, 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 you identify, okay, the priorities and the less is more approach, I really believe, is a much stronger way to go. Having a practice that's an hour and a half, for example, that is really intense, and the tennis player is totally engaged, mentally and physically, trying their hardest, their attitude's great, going after it, is a lot better than, okay, you got to go out and practice for 3 hours. Because you're going to play that tournament Saturday, and they're just slapping balls, they don't want to be there. I think it's a lot better to go 45 minutes like Jimmy Connors used to go, for example, and sometimes his mom or grandmother would stop early so that he wanted to come back, and then he would have time to go do something else. So I think it's really important. I have a student I work with right now, his parents spoke to me and asked me, you know, he wants to do these other sports and wants to play lacrosse, wants to play rugby. What are your thoughts? I said, go do it. It's great, because he'll come with a different appreciation when he comes back to doing tennis 4 days a week, for example, 5 days a week, playing more tournaments. He'll come back with a different perspective. if he wants to go do that, by all means, I think a time away and a balance can be one of the healthiest things that we can do as people, as human beings.
Sure, sure. You know, there's that innate fear, though, on the part of the parent, but also on the part of the kid, that if I don't play this tournament, if I don't practice every day, if I do want to go play a different sport, I'm going to fall so far behind and never be able to catch up, and there go my dreams of college scholarship, professional tennis, or whatever the dream may be. And I think that's a real issue that we just don't talk enough about that in junior tennis. And I think it is one of the factors contributing to the amount of burnout that at least I'm seeing in my son's peer group. These kids are just, it's all tennis all the time, and that's great as long as they're fired up about it, but inevitably there are going to be times where they're not fired up about it. And then there's that challenge as the parent of respecting their need for a break versus not letting them backslide so much that they can't recover.
That's right. It's a challenging and sometimes tricky or sticky situation. The thing is, we cannot let our fears ultimately drive our actions. If we as parents go, okay, well, I'm afraid that if my kid, Johnny, doesn't play this tournament, it's really important, it's a summer sectional, if he doesn't play this tournament, then his ranking's going to drop and it's going to lead to X, Y, and Z. We can have those thoughts, but if we let those actions drive us, it's going to ultimately lead down that road to, oh, I got to play it all the time, I got to do this. And what for? Really, the child should be taking personal responsibility, taking ownership, taking mastery of this sport of tennis, and ultimately be saying, wanting to go out there. When I was younger, I was 12 years old. I think I was 12 years old. I went down for a week to Camarillo, California, and got to train with the Bryan brothers and Wayne Bryan running his tennis program and other players as well. There's a 9-year-old kid I remember. I was 12 years old, and I'm playing sets with this 9-year-old Travis Rettmeyer, who's a professional tennis player. I don't know if he's still playing.
He's a coach here in Atlanta. He's a coach here.
Oh, is he really?
Yes, he's at the club that's right up the street from my house, yes.
That's amazing. That's funny. Tennis is a very small world.
Yes,
for
it
sure.
is.
So I remember going there. And we spent the week out there. My dad had some work down in that area in Ojai. And we spent the week out there, my sister and I, training with the Bryan brothers. And I was so amazed at not just one or two players, but an environment that Wayne Bryan had, a culture that he had established there of mastery, trying to every day get better at the sport, not worried about ranking, but really the passion, the love for the sport, playing and enjoying just being hitting balls on the tennis court. And I saw it in Mike and Bob, and I saw it in these other players like Travis and a lot of top SoCal players that were there and were training that my sister and I got to train with. And I was so impressed with the approach that, okay, there wasn't this, oh my gosh, you've got to be ranked here, and you've got to, well, we don't want to go play this tournament because we might run into X, Y, and Z, and that could be bad for your ranking and all this. his fear approach, it was the exact opposite. It was a love approach. I mean, I remember him challenging us to hit a 250 cross courts. Didn't matter what age you were, you and your partner could hit 250 cross courts, he was going to buy you a soda at the Snack Shack there. So all these kids, we were out there and we were just pounding away for hours trying to do this because we wanted, you know, we wanted a Cherry Coke. And and in it, we were just having so much fun. We didn't even think about, okay, it's a Tuesday practice and it's hot out here, it's 85 degrees and I don't want to be here, I'd rather be playing at the pool with my friends or shooting hoops or something like that. So I think that's really the approach that I personally try and foster as a coach when I'm talking to parents, when I'm talking to tennis players, junior players, and the like, because it should be a sport for life, not, okay, I do it to a point. That's one of the great things about tennis compared to, say, football, for example. There aren't a whole lot of football players playing in their 30s or 80s. So tennis has that innate ability where ultimately it's just one activity that we can do that is healthy and fun and can take us around the world where we develop relationships with other people. I mean, I've been fortunate to interact with people from multiple continents and coach players from Africa to Europe to South America to develop friendships with people that has enriched my life.
Sure. I mean, it's incredible. And I think it's important as parents that we remind our children on a regular basis that this is something we wish for them to have forever, and that their tennis doesn't end when they age out of the 18s or when they graduate from college, that this is something they can do the rest of their life and should do the rest of their life. And, you know, they may, like I did, take a 20-year break from it, but eventually, hopefully, they'll come back and find the game again. So it's a great point you make, Chad. Let's kind of move along, and I want to ask you about this whole idea of mindset in sport, in tennis specifically. There's been a lot written on growth mindset versus fixed mindset, and Carol Dweck wrote a book called Mindset that's all about that, and ever since that book was published, articles have continuously been written comparing the two and trying to explain the two and how they need to interact and all of that. Can you kind of give your explanation of the difference between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset and how they apply to tennis and the pros and cons of each?
I'd be happy to. So, like you said, Lisa, Carol Dweck wrote that book. It was published in 2006. And if your audience has not read it, I highly recommend it. It will, whether you've heard these terms, read articles, that sort of thing, it'll really focus down on the critical points of the way we think about life as a parent, as an athlete, whatever role it may be, as a business manager in the office. So specifically with tennis, there's two mindsets. Carol Dweck talks about there's the growth mindset and the fixed mindset. The growth mindset means that a person, a tennis player, can continually improve their game. They can continually change and get better through the process of learning and practice, repetition. The fixed mindset it's static. I am what I am. I was born this way, for example. I'm not going to be a great server because I'm only 5'9" versus being, if I was 6'4", then, you know, I could have a massive serve. So it's, all right, I was 4'5", so I'm gonna have to be fast. And if I'm not as fast as so-and-so, that's just the way it is. There's nothing I can really do to change that. Let me interrupt you one second, Chad.
So would you say that someone with a growth mindset could be defined as coachable versus someone with a fixed mindset may not be considered as coachable?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. One of the elements, categories of a growth mindset is ability to accept criticism and feedback. And that's coachability in every shape of the word. So person who's coachable goes, okay, I can take this information. It's not a personal attack. It's not an attack on my ego. Then they're trying to help me, whether it's coming from a coach, a parent, another player, a peer, whoever it may be, and going, okay, all right, this is an opportunity to, wow, they're trying to help me improve my backhand. Yeah, I want to work on my forehand, but if I improve my backhand, it's going to make me twice the player. The fixed mindset's going, well, you're making me look stupid. You know, you're not... It's based on natural talent, so I wasn't born like this. I'm not going to be able to develop a slice backhand. Why are you having me work on the slice backhand? I can hit forehands all day long. So it's having an open mind with the growth mindset, and it's a very fixed or closed mind with that fixed mindset.
Got it. And so... In the tennis arena, we as parents oftentimes will get one thing from our kid, whereas a coach will get something very different. And to be more specific, with me, my son presents a fixed mindset a lot of the time. With his coaches, he's the exact opposite. You know, everything they say has merit. He is open to suggestion, open to trying something new, which, you know, I'm thankful for that, that he's like that. Otherwise, it would be a waste of money and time. But so from the parental side, though, you know, I think sometimes we can fall into that trap of thinking how our child is with us is how they are in the world, and that may not necessarily be the case.
That's exactly right. I was. I think it's pretty common of that age demographic, the teenager, to think that their parents are as stupid as they come, right? Don't know anything, have no life experience, they're only out to make the teenager miserable. And I'll give a great illustration of that. I remember being a 15-year-old and my parents were trying to get me to do something, and I was, no, Mom, Dad, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, who are you? You haven't been there. You haven't done that sort of thing. And then I remember going over to my friend's house, and their parents were saying the same thing to him, and the light bulb goes on. It's like, wow, that's a great idea. That's so true. I should totally do that. That would help me tremendously, tenfold. Hundredfold. So I go back to my parents that evening. We're having dinner. I'm like, hey, I got to tell you something. Da, da, da. I was at so-and-so's house, and they said this to me, and it clicked. And my parents were like, you got to be kidding me. We've been telling you that for the last 3 months. And I think that's just the, I tell that story because I think that illustrates the situation across the board, right? So it's important for parents just to ask, try to open up those lines of communication rather than telling, asking. And it's what questions we ask, because their questions are extremely powerful. So instead of asking, for example, how did the lesson go, or what are your thoughts about the match? That could be good, actually. But maybe even more specific, going, what did you learn? What did you have? What was fun about this weekend playing the tournament? And trying to draw out from the child, the tennis player, the growth mindset of, hey, I do like playing this sport, and I am getting something out of it, and it's not just, okay, win or lose, if I win, I'm the greatest, and if I lose, I'm a failure. It's how can I change, how can I grow, how can I improve, what can I learn from this, how can I enjoy it? So I think that's a critical key, and it's okay as a parent if your child, I mean, it's wonderful, if your child is open to learning, but open to learning from others. I mean, we want to foster that, of course. We want them to be able to learn from everyone, but at that stage of their life, they may not be open to learning from their parents as often as we would like as parents. And rather than forcing that, we can facilitate opportunities like you're talking about for them to learn from their coach, and who's an adult who has a lot of different life experiences, looks through different glasses and says, okay, hey, go ahead and try this, Johnny. Go ahead and do this, Becky. And come back next week and tell me what worked, what didn't, why, what are your thoughts about it? What did you like about it, what didn't you? What did you get from this experience? And it can be a great opportunity for the child to develop and define themselves as they mature.
Right. Well, so to me, that kind of leads to the idea that maybe finding some sort of mentor for our kids is another way to foster that whole growth mindset idea. Finding a mentor that's maybe just a few years older, that has more recently been where our child is in terms of experiences. And, I've written about the whole mentor thing a bunch, and I know for my son, having guys that are 2-3 years older than he is that are going through the things that he aspires to go through with his tennis has been a great resource for him. Can you talk a little bit about the idea of finding mentors for our kids and as parents, how that can play a key role with them?
It's a great point, Lisa, you make. Having a mentor or mentors, guides, is important in every stage of life and in every activity. It increases our learning rate and cuts down on the time that you spend on that activity because you don't have to make 100 or 1,000 mistakes to get to a certain point. You can go, okay, I'm going to try it this way because it worked for them, and you can mirror and model. And a great example of that right now going on in the last 5+ years, for example, is at the Junior Tennis Champion Center in Baltimore, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a gentleman, a lot of information's come out in the media in the last year or so because of the success that they've had on the with players, results, the national scene as well as the international scene. And Beth Aponka came to Denver, Colorado, and spoke to us as tennis pros at a couple clubs and talked about how they actually have structured their tennis center to have mentorship involved, older players mentoring younger players. And it works both ways. And he brought up this point saying that the older player, it makes them be accountable and responsible as an individual to model the behaviors that they would like a younger person to do. So it's not just about them anymore, which is a great thing in an individual sport like tennis, because when they want to play high school tennis, they're on a team. If they want to play college tennis, they're on a team. Junior team tennis, it's a team format. And so it's not just about you as an individual. So I think it's really good, even if it's informal, even if it's in an informal setting, you know, just a conversation here and there with modeling, looking up to older players, how they behave, or even peers. It can even be peers as you're going along, going, oh, you know, I really, really like the way so-and-so behaves, and doing the same thing as parents as well. For example, a great example of that is I grew up, like I said, playing tennis in Northern California, and we would, outside of the matches, we would go to dinner with other families and kick back and enjoy the time together. And there was a girl that I grew up playing with, Christina Fusano, and was the same age and all through the juniors, and her mom was just so laid back at tournaments. You would go up and you'd ask her, how's Christina doing? What's the score? And she would be reading a book or talking to somebody. And she, I don't know, I wasn't even watching her. And Christina was not losing first round. This was a girl who was number one seed, winning the tournaments, one of the top players in the nation. And she went on to win an NCAA doubles title at Cal Berkeley. She's an NCAA champion. She's an All-American. All-American and top 100 in the world in doubles. Made up to, I think, 93 in the world in doubles. And every single time I saw Christina, whether it was at a training or a tournament, her mom put off this energy, this aura, that it was all okay. Everything's going to be okay. We're enjoying this tennis. And so I personally tried to, as a tennis player, even though she was a peer, and Christina had that same way, that just joy, that just passion for the game, I tried to model that. Even though she was the same age and of a different gender, I tried to model that because when I was really engaged in the flow of the activity, that's where I was. I was just happy. I wasn't worried about, oh, if I beat this person, I'm going to move up two spots in the rankings. But if I lose to him, I could move down three, and that could affect my quota for nationals. All that, that's just distractions. That's us getting in our own way. So I think finding mentors at your club, at tournaments, that as a parent, modeling other parents that you like their behavior, the way they communicate with you as another parent and with their children playing the sport. And then also for the tennis player, can be invaluable both on and off the court as a person and an athlete.
Right, right. Well, so let's take this to the next step. We're down to our last 10 minutes or so. How can parents work with coaches to make this tennis thing more fun?
That's a good question. So, number one, I think it's always bringing the focus back to that. It's bringing the keeping perspective back to that. Number two, it's having open lines of communication with the coach. And really saying, setting out our philosophy, our mission of what value we want to get out of this experience, what value we hope our child gets out of this activity. And communicating with the coach and finding the right coach, because there are coaches all over out there with different approaches and different philosophies. So it's finding the right fit, just like you do with selecting a teacher for your sixth grader. You're trying to find a good match for your child to have a great experience playing tennis. And a great experience can also mean dealing with failure. That's going to be part of it. If they want to compete, they're going to lose a lot. That's part of the growing process, and having the focus on enjoyment and achievement, and those sitting side by side and working together, rather than one or the other. Okay, we're just going to enjoy the sport, but not compete because we're afraid of losing, or every time we got to go out and win the tournament. Otherwise, what we're doing doesn't work. And I know there are coaches out there who definitely in this country feel the pressure to get quick, short-term results because they go, otherwise they might lose business because the parents are going to go, okay, we're going to go to the next coach down the road who can help my child eventually get where they need to go. So I think the focus can be more on happy achievement and learning from this wonderful sport that we're choosing to spend our time, our money, our effort, our energy pursuing.
As a coach, how do you handle it when a parent comes to you and says, why isn't my kid winning more?
Why isn't my kid winning anymore? Is that what you asked?
Winning more. Like, you know, little Johnny's winning all his matches. How come my kid's not winning? How do you handle that?
So, first off, I say comparison. One of my new famous phrases is comparison is the thief of joy. So I say, all right, let's get away from focusing on somebody else, and I start asking questions. As a coach, start asking questions, and really that's not the driving force. They're afraid of what the losing means. It's the meaning that comes with losing. Okay, so the parent is afraid of pain for their child. No parent. It's in our nature. No parent wants their child to go through any pain. But pain equals growth. If we look at it that way, if we go, okay, when our child is a baby, we don't prevent them from learning to walk. We facilitate helping them learn to walk, and we let them fall down over and over and over again. There aren't a lot of kids out there that learn to walk the first time, stood up and started walking and then running. So as a coach, I specifically just start asking them questions. Okay, why are you so concerned about this? What are we really looking at right now? because if we're looking at developing, if we're looking at a long-term timeline, is losing right now for 3 months or 6 months going to be the best thing or the worst thing for your child? If we just look at it inside this box of this 3 month timeline, and my son Tommy keeps losing to Johnny, and he used to beat Johnny a year ago, and you changed his back end, and now he can't beat Johnny anymore, and that's going to be the way it is forever now, I think it can lead down a dangerous road of thought. That's where fear can drive us. We have to learn to use the fear rather than letting the fear use us as parents, well, as coaches, as people.
Right. But I think, you know, I'm sure you've seen this, that there are situations where a coach may be working on something developmentally with a child, but young or older, and the child goes through a period of not being able to win matches because they're learning a new stroke or tweaking something or working on a specific strategic aspect of their game, and they just haven't nailed it yet. But maybe the coach didn't do such a good job of letting the parents know what was going on and saying to the parents, you know, I know your child is signed up to play a tournament next weekend and then 1-2 weekends after that. Here is what we're working on in practice. So here's how I want you to judge their performance at the tournament. Don't look at whether or not they've won the match. I want you to look at, did they implement the things that I've told them to implement? And I feel like the onus is on the coaches to do a better job with that so that we as parents can do a better job out in the field, if you will, watching our children compete and not let it be about the outcome per se, the win or the loss, but rather about, did they implement the game plan? Did they do what their coach asked of them? But if we as parents don't know what that is, then our hands are tied out there, and I think we automatically default to that setting of, if the child won, it was successful. If the child lost, it wasn't. Does that make sense to you?
This makes great sense, Lisa. Yeah, so that's where I agree. A big chunk of the responsibility lies with the coach to communicate to the child effectively, to the athlete, the tennis player, as well as with the parents, to the parents, this is what we're working on right now. And it's not a finished product by any stretch of the imagination, and that's okay. But I'd like them, here's the benefits down the road of this process. Here's the outcome we're looking for, say, in 1 year, in 3 years, in 5 years. So it's okay if Johnny tries this and is not successful at first, because if he keeps at it, I'd rather have him do that than stunt his growth. And that's where it comes back to twofold. The parents initiating that sometimes as well, because most coaches out there are not coaching solely one individual. They're coaching many individuals. So they don't just have that one student, that one child. So it's a two-way street. For sure, coaches can take more of an ownership role in communicating that effectively. We're working on, you know, we're working on this flat serve. That means their first serve percentage is probably going to go down. But I'd rather see them keep trying to master this and make mistakes in the process quicker and quicker, so that they get better and better at that, because it's going to help them hold their serve easier than just slicing the serve in at 60%, getting it in and starting the point. Yeah, they're going to win more now, but they're not going to be able to develop the flat serve, which is going to become a weapon, a huge asset to them. So that's why we're talking today, right? It's challenging. It's difficult. It's not easy a lot of times. But the key is having, I think, that perspective on it, that one match, one tournament is not going to define the tennis player's future.
Right.
And well, going, okay, this is a timeline. This is a process.
Right. And I think that's the key takeaway for all of us, is remembering that it is a process, oftentimes a long one, and we have to step back from time to time and look backward and look at the progress that our children are making along that pathway. And again, you know, being nearing the end of the junior tennis thing with my kid, you know, I look back and just am in awe of what my child has done over the last 10 years on the tennis court and off. But, you know, since this tennis show, we'll talk about on the tennis court. And you know, taking a lot of pride in that as his parent, that, you know, I've watched him stick with it through some rough periods and you know, fight through the urge to quit or to give up. And I think, you know, that's what we can all hope for, is that progress. Chad, thank you so much for coming on today. For parents that want to reach out to you, they can find you at adisciplinedmind.com. You are also on Twitter and on Facebook, so listeners, I urge you to follow Chad on both and see all of the great stuff that he's put out there. Chad, thank you again for being with us, and to my listeners, have a great week, and I'll see you next week on Parenting Aces.
Great.